everybody. Welcome to
Twin Souls Podcast with your hosts,
Jordan
and Kelsey.
Stay tuned for an episode of Murder, Mystery,
and Mayhem. Welcome, everybody, to our second Murder, Mystery, and Mayhem episode, where we dive into the mystery of Amelia Earhart. What happened to her? What did the theory say? Did she survive? What happened to her plane? Stay tuned to hear all of the details on Twin Souls Podcast.
Some of the world's greatest innovators, inventors, adventurers came from the early 1990s. Today, I'll be telling you about the mysterious disappearance of one of the most famous female aviators in history. She goes by the name of Amelia Earhart. Amelia was born July 24th, 1897, in Atchison, Kansas, to Edwin and Amy Earhart. She had a younger sister named Muriel. Amelia and Muriel would often get sent to their grandparents' home for a period of time due to the ever-changing home life and the struggle that Edwin had with his love of alcohol. Amelia attended various schools throughout her life and often found struggle between balancing friends and good grades. She was often described as a tomboy, exploring the neighborhood, climbing trees, and roughhousing. She graduated from Hyde Park High School in Chicago in 1916. 1 year later, she traveled to Toronto to see her sister and eventually stayed and became a nurse at the Spadina Military Hospital. During this time, she became quite fond of the pilots and often hung out watching at the Royal Flying Corps in Toronto. She ended up contracting the Spanish flu while being a nurse, and she ended up contracting the Spanish flu and soon became a patient herself. After a long two-month battle with the flu, she was discharged. However, she was not without a terrible case of chronic sinusitis, significantly affected her activities later in her future. In 1920, she moved back to California to be with her parents. That same year, on December 28th, her life was changed. Her father took her to an airfield where pilot Frank Hawks, a record-breaking, ended up taking Amelia on her first flight. She was quoted saying, "By the time we were 200 to 300 feet off the ground, I knew I had to fly." Less than a week later, she had managed to gather up $1,000 for her first lessons. She earned this money by taking on various jobs. On January 3rd, 1921, she had her first lesson. She was committed and stopped at nothing to get to where we know her most famously as now. She broke the world record for the highest elevation for a female pilot at 14,000 feet. 8 months later, on May 15th, 1923, she became the 16th woman to receive her pilot's license. So she broke a world record before she even got her pilot's license.
Yeah, that's incredible.
I don't think that would happen now in our time. You can't break a record, I don't think, without a pilot's license. During this time, her grandmother had passed away, and her mother, Amy, would administer any remaining funds in the trust fund that they had. It shortly ran out, and like all money does, she ended up selling her plane. The next few years were a whirlwind of a time. In 1928, she became the first woman to cross a transatlantic on a plane. She was only a passenger. As much as an amazing feat this was, Amelia felt kind of useless, always wanting and needing to get her hands on the plane itself and get in that pilot position. She received many awards, medals, and honors for her amazing career and record-breaking flights. 10 years later, she began her intercontinental flight around the world. Amelia, Fred, and Paul Mance, a technical advisor, as well as one other person, were a part of the crew. The plan was they would leave from Oakland, California, head west towards Hawaii, then towards Asia, Africa. However, intermittent problems occurred, and they ended up having to land the plane in Hawaii shortly after flight. 3 days later, upon takeoff, almost immediately they encountered a variety of issues led to the trip to be postponed. They rescheduled the trip to June 1st, 1937. Their new plan, they were going to fly from Oakland to Miami, head down towards Central and South America. They were going to turn east, head towards Africa. Then they would fly steady west until they reached the Indian Ocean. Their trip so far went planned. 22,000 miles into their journey, they arrived in Ley, New Guinea. There were 7,000 miles remaining to get to Oakland, the last stop in their journey. This leads us to their last flight. On July 2nd, the pair flew out at about midnight. This was actually the last time they were ever seen alive. They had planned, however, they were not without issues and errors themselves, which they had actually planned extremely well. However, there were errors upon errors that occurred, which had led and resulted to the mystery and disappearance of both of them. Okay. So this trip, however, there was only two of them, Amelia and Paul Mance. On July 2nd, the pair flew out at about midnight, and that was the last time they were seen alive. They had planned extremely well. However, there were errors upon errors that occurred, which led and resulted in the mystery and disappearance of both of them. At midnight, they left Ley and headed towards Howland Island. To explain Howland Island, it is an extremely small in size. It's about 6,500 feet long, 1,600 feet wide. In the island, they had actually planned on using celestial navigation as a backup for their route. If skies were overcast, they had planned to have radio communication with a U.S. Coast Guard vessel called the Itasca, which was actually stationed off Howland Island. They had maps and compasses, and they knew how to use the sun to make an educated guess on their position. They actually planned really well, from what it seems like. They actually even planned to ditch the plane if they had to. So to say that they ended up going missing anyways is actually a huge surprise, because they had plan after plan after plan. You could only plan so well for issues that come up that you know of. Any issues that you can't think of may happen still. And I'm guessing that's exactly what happened in this situation.
That's what it sounds like.
12:30, they left. They ran into difficulties almost immediately. Witnesses actually say that upon takeoff, the radio antenna may have actually been damaged. The weather was extremely overcast, making celestial navigation to be almost useless. Finally, it was discovered that Amelia and Fred, this is the kicker, may have been using maps that are inaccurate up to 6 miles. If you had enough gas to get you 5 miles and not six, you're going to be off by a complete mile minimum.
Yeah, totally. So I wonder if they got the maps or someone gave them to them.
That information is not known. I don't understand who decided, though, that the maps they have been using may have been inaccurate. Like I understand that continental drift occurs. Mm-hmm. So are we saying this now in 2018, when this information was posted, or was this back in the 30s? Because I'm assuming islands would have drifted a bit of time in almost 100 years. Next, we actually have some radio signals and calls that came through.
And so she was also changing frequencies during the crash, trying to reach somebody.
She could not reach anybody.
No, they could not hear her. They couldn't make out, except for maybe the last, couple sentences that she had said.
That's exactly right. After the Itasca realized they had lost communication, President Franklin D. Roosevelt authorized $4 million, 66 aircraft, and 9 ships for a search effort. That search was actually called off on July 18th, 1937, and the pair were both declared legally dead. I'm going to go through the radio signals first before we talk about a little bit about her marriage, because she was an interesting character, speaking about her as an individual and a woman of her time. The first calls that were stating cloudy and overcast weather. There was a call at 5 a.m., but that was actually unable to be heard due to static. At 6:15, another call came through stating that the aircraft was 200 miles and requested a ship to use its direction finder to provide a bearing for the aircraft. Amelia began whistling into the microphone, but it was soon discovered that the RDF system that they were using could not tune into the aircraft's frequency. Radio man Leo actually later said in an interview that he was sitting there sweating buckets of blood because there was nothing he can do. The RDF system, if it can't tune to it, you can't tune to it. There's only so much additional help that you can provide when your first system failed. At 6:45, another call came in for a bearing, as they were estimated to be about 100 miles away. At 7:30, Earhart says, running out of gas, half hour left. They can't hear us at all. We can hear them and are sending frequencies at the same time constantly. 7:20, so about 12 minutes later, calling Itasca, we must be on you, but we cannot hear you or see you. Gas is running low, unable to reach you by radio. We are flying at 1,000 feet. At 7:58, the loudest and clearest signal stating they were in the immediate area. They could not send voice, so they tried Morse code instead. Their last transmission was at 8:43 a.m. We are on line 157 and 337. Moments later, there was a questionable log stating that they were running on north and south instead of north and west. To get back to a little bit about her marriage now, she did have some interesting things to say. So Amelia and George Putnam met when she came to his office for a public meeting. However, he actually kept her waiting for over an hour. Once they met, she realized he was rude and impolite. I mean, we all know girls secretly like that. Rude and impoliteness. They two, you know, somehow started spending more time together and fondness grew into an affair. George actually divorced his wife. Yes, he was married, just so we state that. She actually made him propose 7 times before she accepted. She had some interesting things to say in her prenups. One of them was, I will not be faithful. Second one, I will not quit flying. There were no guests besides George, George's mother, and 2 witnesses. They did not exchange wedding rings. The judge addressed Amelia as Miss Putnam. She responded, please, sir, please call me Miss Earhart. Let's talk about those prenups for a second later. I will not be faithful. I will not quit flying. I mean, I understand the quit flying, but I was like, oh, okay there. She's out there playing the field still.
She's telling him how it's going to be.
She really is. And I mean, 7 times, he obviously loved her a lot. I thought that was some interesting information, but we can remove
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
All right, so let's get into a couple of the theories about what happened.
After Amelia's disappearance, there were news articles going around with headlines that read, Earhart plane lost at sea. Do you think there's any truth in that? Or what other theories have you heard and various survival claims floating around on the internet?
So what I think happened, before we get into any of the theories that I did hear, I think that maybe they did find an island. I don't want to say if it was Howland Island or another island out there, just because the next closest island, I believe, was something like 300 miles away. And if the radio signals came in stating that they were in the immediate area, I don't understand how far they could get within an hour if they were expecting to be in the immediate area.
True.
So the first theory that I did hear is the crash and sink theory, which is the most easy to explain. They said they were running out of gas. They had about a half hour left. My theory is that they crashed, sank. And that was basically the end of the story. There was a bunch of different information out there stating otherwise. So there was another theory out there that talked about Amelia being a spy.
Yeah, they said that she was, Jameson actually was the one that claimed that Amelia was a spy for the U.S. government and that she was flying a secret mission to photograph Japanese military installations in the Pacific at the time of what he calls her so-called disappearance.
So with that whole spy theory, there's 2 ways it could go. So one is that they received new identities, so both Amelia and Fred Noonan, as well the execution for being a spy by the Japanese. So maybe she did get caught and they were both executed. So those are 2 kind of theories out there regarding execution and spies, but there is another theory out there called the Gardner Island Hypothesis. There is a group out there known as the TIAR, the International Group for Historic Aircraft Recovery. They actually estimated that Earhart and Noonan were 350 miles away from the Gardner Island, also known as Nicomaro. The island would have actually been inhabited in the early 1930s. A theory is that they were 350 miles away and they circled around the island and gradually made their way down before crashing, surviving for weeks, possibly days. We actually would have no idea on how long that was. The reasons for this theory is that there's plexiglass found on the island. There was bones. There was a woman's shoe dating back to the early 1930s. Improvised tools, cosmetic jar, a human finger. A skull was actually buried in 1940. Additional bones that were found, these bones were actually lost sometime in the early 40s. Those are the bones that could tell us for sure in 2021 if for sure it is Amelia, if it's Fred, or is it just somebody else who was inhabited on the island?
Especially if they have a DNA genetic profile now and all the stuff they have that they can actually test the body and the bones.
Of course. Like, we have so much technology nowadays that at least we'd be able to find out or narrow it down. In the skull, there would have been teeth. We would have had those dental records.
And not only that, but they could actually find out where the body originated from by using the teeth, by taking like a swab or a piece of the tooth.
Of course, of course. If they had this technology back then, I'm sure we wouldn't be having this conversation about if it's Amelia or not. But the thing is, they did their tests. If it had to do with Amelia, and it could have been an execution by the Japanese, the plane was shot down. So the Japanese could have possibly shot her plane down. That would make sense for why they were 350 miles away, not near Howland Island, but near Nikumaru Island. You go back to the radio signals, though. I'm confused how this aircraft recovery team can put the radio signals at the strongest possible signal. I guess they could 350 miles away could be the closest they actually were. These clearness, they stated that they were in the immediate area. They were in the Howland area.
Right.
So the fact that they got 350 miles away when they were about 1,000 feet up circling the area, how they drifted 350 miles away to this Nikumaru Island kind of confuses me. But this,
and why?
Exactly. And the group is the group who actually discovered the Titanic.
Interesting.
So to say that their hypothesis should be pretty spot on just adds to more confusion with the whole radio signals and everything. So at 7:30, it says running out of gas, only half hour left. Then it's just over an hour and 15 minutes later. There was a questionable log that they couldn't understand. Like, all these theories kind of tie into each other. If she was on Nikumaru, they could have flown towards Howland Island, checked in. Hey, we're here. And then just took off towards Nikumaru Island back in the Pacific Ocean. And then they were caught by the Japanese and executed, shot down.
Or they were thrown into, maybe the plane landed and the Japanese people, maybe they took them and threw them in the jail and hit her plane. I mean, there's a million different possibilities.
There are. They are 100% positive. They're like, case closed. She died on Nikumaru Island. We're not going to find more. And that's that. Kind of leaves more questions.
It does. It does leave more questions. There's so many different plausible theories about her disappearance.
Of course, there really are.
And why did they never find a second body? And that's what I'm wondering. If there were two passengers, her and another person in the plane, why did they only find one? Did they crash in the water? Did someone swim out and get to the island and die of starvation?
Well, exactly.
I mean, there's a million different plausible things that you could say, and theories and claims. In my opinion, I just think she crashed and they drowned and the plane went down. That's what I think.
Yeah.
Why couldn't anyone find them?
Why did it take as many aircraft and boats and they came up with nothing?
Exactly.
They were out there looking almost immediately once they realized that they lost communication and there was nothing else they could do.
And where did they go?
They're actually, so I didn't include this in the information, but there's actually a bunch of reports, radio signals coming in from the United States, from Canada, stating that Amelia Earhart seeking help, basically. I think it was for about a week after the crash, of someone possibly stating to be Amelia needing help.
Huh, that's interesting.
Right?
Did anything ever come of that or no?
No, I don't think there was really anything they can do. They can't go back and re-listen to radio signals. It's just, someone was listening to radio one night, which is totally possible in the early 1930s. What else are you going to do other than listen to radio?
It's true.
Chat back and forth with your bestie in the closet.
Yeah, there you go.
Basically, my theory is that came across an island, circled around. Like I said, if they lasted at least an hour and 15 minutes, I'm hoping that within an hour and 15 minutes, they were able to find another island. Possibly they could have made it all the way to Nikumaru. I don't know if coasting at 1,000 feet for an hour would get them 350 miles away. It's a possibility. I'm not a aviator, so I wouldn't be able to tell the truth in that. If they did make it to Nikumaru, they circled, landed, either one died upon impact or both of them died upon impact. Like we said, there was bones and then something that appeared to be a human finger. I'm like, that's kind of vague. What do you mean appeared to be a human? It is or it isn't.
Yeah, it's true. They should be able to tell with DNA testing.
But these were some of the bones that were lost. So it's basically going on the person, the investigator's firsthand report on finding them, trying to cross-reference to confirm or deny that they went about the right process in identifying the bones.
And now they're gone and lost, and they don't know where they are. So what happened to Amelia? What happened to her presumed bones or body? Where'd they go?
And then it comes back to theories. Like, it could make sense that it was the Japanese. Someone stole her bones.
Yeah, it does. Didn't
want her to be found.
I think someone didn't want her to be found. Someone didn't want her to fly that last mission.
It wouldn't make total sense that those bones that went missing were hers and that
other man,
whoever, someone.
Yeah, I agree.
Told the investigator, hi, thank you so much. We'll confiscate those for now.
Yeah, exactly. Like that is so bizarre to me that the bones are gone.
Oh, it really is. It really
so basically is. We'll never know. Someone didn't want people to know something.
Right.
They made her disappear. I'm convinced of it. It could have been a crash. Reality says it was probably just a crash and they drown. But then there's like when they go back to try to find the crash site, even a day or two later, and where it could have floated off to, they have people that can do that, like marine biologists.
Exactly.
And yet they spent all this money to look for the plane specifically to try to find them, and they couldn't even find the plane. So what happened to the plane?
Like the closest thing was the plexiglass.
Yeah.
That appeared to be from the windshield. So it's just like, oh, okay, sure.
Doesn't make sense.
You know what kind of would make sense though, would be the $4 million being used to hush.
Yes.
Something did happen with Amelia. Let's clean this up.
I mean, it was so clean. I mean, how could it not be something government involved? It was so clean.
I'm going to assume that they checked the whole area between, I guess, Howland Island all the way to Nikumaru.
Oh, probably. Gardner
Island to conclude this information. But
yeah, I know they did a big search, cost billions of dollars. And they never found anything. No body, no teeth, no clothes. Well, no clothing as far as I've heard, no clothing.
No, I don't think there was any clothing. The woman's shoe that was dated from the 1930s. Right? How easy is it to plant a shoe, though?
Exactly. That's my point. So either someone did something, they got messy, they left it behind. Who knows? Maybe Amelia left it behind herself to say, hey, I was here. That's why it's a mystery.
There was another picture. There was a picture, I believe it was sometime 2 years later, possibly. And it was of, I believe in Japan, I could be wrong, but on a port, a woman who looked to have the same type of haircut as Amelia, and a man who some people have actually concluded was Amelia and Fred, alive 2 years later. The photo is such bad quality that they can't fix it up, confirm or deny, like always. So it's just, you know, another one of those theories that adds on
are floating out around the internet. Either way, it's a cool mystery. It's like you don't even know how it really ends, so it's difficult to end it, but it's just a kind of a cool mystery to figure out all the possibilities of what could have happened to her.
Of course.
And her flying partner, I guess I want to say. I don't remember his name, but
Fred Noonan,
that's it. So yes. I still
so think- it was Amelia, Fred Noonan, and then Paul Mance, who was a technical advisor who was supposed to be there with them.
Right. Okay. He didn't go for a reason. Maybe it was pre-planned, the flight. Maybe purposely he wasn't on that flight because someone told him not to be. So
you know, that could be. That could very well be. I mean, there's I don't think you will ever know.
And just go really over all the different theories and survival claims. Like, what if she did survive and she did die under a different name? And
it's a case that's we're gonna probably say this all so often that we will never know the full truth. We can speculate, give our own additional theories, maybe confirm or deny theories that are out there that we agree with.
Yeah. And during my research, I couldn't really find anything on her husband, like that he was concerned for her, really. Or I couldn't really find anything about the husband begging for her return, per se.
I totally agree there. When I was going through a lot of the information, it really didn't clue in. So when we so this is our second time recording this. The first time quality was really bad, so we needed to re-record. So now this is our second time. When I listened to the first time back, I was like, you know what, we didn't mention anything about she was she even married. And I researched the stuff and I was like, she was married. Okay, well, let me look into this a little bit. But they never really talked about him. I didn't read or hear anything really about him after she went missing. He probably hoped for her to come back. I mean, he asked her to marry her 7 times.
Yeah.
And he was happy and agreed to any stipulations with the marriage that came along. So I would assume he was heartbroken. And
I mean, it seemed like it was an open marriage. So maybe he just kind of moved on and was hoping she'd come back. I don't know. It's hard to say. I can't really find anything about the husband and his claims or what he thinks happened to her.
I agree. There's nothing out there that I could find either to confirm or deny anything or to add to any speculation out there.
And a lot of people, and this is just kind of an ignorant stereotype, I suppose, but I do want to touch upon it because it is in various groups, that Amelia was lesbian or bisexual. And for some reason that played into this case, people were talking about maybe that's why she went missing and she had a secret lover or something and, you know, all that other stuff. That doesn't really matter, though. Obviously pretty open with her husband. So I just feel like her sexuality is her business.
Oh, I totally agree there. Her business. You know, it's just rumors out there.
Based on the way she looked, like her haircut was short and, you know.
She was tall. She was very tomboyish.
Yeah, I think she was just judged on her appearance and people just assumed she was gay.
Yes, that's so true. People just took it to assuming, and they could have been right, could have been wrong, but
yeah, we'll never know.
Does it really matter?
Doesn't matter.
I'm curious to know what her career would have been like had she have made the trip. Like, she would making the trip back, she would have gone, if she wasn't already celebrity status, like through the roof.
Yeah.
Through the roof. Like,
and she was already a symbol for the first female aviator, really, that flew across the Pacific Ocean, Atlantic or Pacific.
And that was the first time she flown as a passenger. So even though she wasn't a pilot, she still made records. Not wanting to, oh, I'm going to be a record breaker. Like, she was not like that.
No, I'm going to do it.
And I'm going to take every opportunity as it comes.
And she was, I just want to say too, for people that want to know, she was ultimately declared dead. Her husband had her declared dead.
That's true.
So she disappeared July 2nd, 1937. She was only 39 years old. No one has heard from her since. And this was just a fun episode that we chose because I think it's fun to bring it back up and kind of go through history. She would have been an absolute symbol for as far as female aviators go, if she had survived.
She seemed like the type of woman who would have made it to be over 100 years old.
Oh yeah. She was determined.
She was, she really was. I don't know about that chronic sinusitis,
yeah,
whatever. Like, how that would have affected her in her old age.
Well, it causes headaches and eye pressure, so probably it would have. But I don't think she would have let it stop her.
No, I don't think so either. I think she would have gone until she couldn't go anymore.
Yeah, I agree.
To this day, it remains a mystery, and probably for the rest of history, it will remain a mystery. Never solved, always unsolved.
Unfortunately, yeah. She paid the price for it, we think.
Yeah, you know what? It's hard to know. She paid the price. Either she was too let me do this, too confident, which led to the downfall, or based on what we know, just problem after problem, problem arise that.
Yeah, there's also could be a conspiracy where someone was purposely trying to give her the wrong map and not put the third passenger on the plane. And there's all kinds of stuff that's been floating around the internet. So this was our episode on Amelia Earhart.
We really hope you enjoyed the mystery for today. Be sure to like, share, subscribe, and listen and check out every episode that we got.
And also follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.